Welcome back to the Human Values Podcast. I'm your host, Javier Payano, and it's been a while since I've flown solo, but here I am. Lisa Fernanda will be back to join us again next time. But I'm excited to get on here and share with you about slow movement today, the value of the week, a couple weeks back. I'm sure feeling the vibe, the island vibe, the slow movement vibe. I just got back from a couple of weeks first in Costa Rica with my wife, Andrea, visiting her family. We had an amazing time. Our first trip to the south of Costa Rica, where we got to get on a boat and see a mom whale, humpback whale, with her newborn baby whale. And a beautiful thing that struck me from that experience is our tour guide was sharing how mom's not going to really jump out of the water. We saw her just slightly above the surface. And who we did see jumping was the baby whale, of course, the calf. And the baby would jump out and we would all be like, oh my God, so beautiful, recording on our phones. And then the baby whale would get tired. And after the baby whale got tired, you would see mom come up and just like kind of push the baby along as the baby was resting towards the surface of the water. So very, very resonant with that of as adults having the passion and wanting to let our children be free and happy and then be there to support them when they're tired or exhausted or they need extra emotional support, which they often do. So I'm excited to be able to spend that time with Andrea's family there. We also then spent 2 weeks in Dominican Republic to visit my family. My mom's Puerto Rican, my dad's Dominican. And so I was so grateful to go there and be with my Dominican family since it's been 5 years since I've been there. So it was a wonderful time of reconnecting with my cousins. And there's all of these values that I know that I have, values of hospitality, of sharing, of care, of verbal and physical affection, that I was delighted to realize were very present in my Dominican family. So I was like, ah, that's where I get it from, you know? And it's just amazing for me to connect with my roots. And I'm inspired to share moving forward a lot more about myself and my story and my roots, because as a teacher, I can get caught up in the desire to want to teach and inform and, you know, see someone in pain or having a hard time and just wanting to help them. But often as teachers, we know, and as parents too, sometimes the best way to teach the children about values like love, truth, peace, nonviolence, and right action is through our own lived experience, is through our own story. So I'm very inspired to share more about my own story moving forward. So this is episode 13. We at the Human Values Collective, our nonprofit organization, believe that every child deserves a home where truth, love, and courage are practiced out loud and not just hoped for. We want our kids to be happy. We want them to have good relationships and good mental health and do well academically. But in the hustle and bustle and the hurry, worry, busy and the endless scheduling events and the to-do lists, the things that make us human, the connecting with other human beings and connecting especially with our children, are things that often get relegated to the wayside. Even though for me, and many of us out there listening, are the most important things, how to connect with other human beings. Because we all know the quality of our life is determined by the quality of our relationships. So I'm super excited. This week I would show up to my class if we were in class. Class is not in session yet. Next week, here at the middle of August, we will be beginning Teacher Week. So we start preparing the classroom, getting things ready. I'm excited to meet my new students and excited to meet my returning students. But if I were in front of the students, I would say, all right, everybody, lovely to see you, lovely to be with you. This week, through the lens of right action, which is our universal human value, we're practicing the value of slow movement. And our thought of the week is, when I slow down, I show up. So often, like I said, the hurry, the worry, the busy, the scheduling, all of these things are happening, and it may feel sometimes even dangerous to slow down. Why would it feel dangerous to slow down? I think the idea is that many of us are valued for our productivity, for what we can produce. And we all love our children deeply and dearly. But we can often default to the way that we were raised and the way that we were taught in school. And a little part of that is the withdrawal of love when someone is not doing what you need them to do. And let me pause and talk about love for a little bit, because I did a really incredible presentation for the North White School Corporation in rural Indiana. Shout out to Tim for having me out there to talk to about 70 teachers about culturally responsive teaching, restorative practices, and education and human values. It was an incredible experience. But there was a comment from one of the staff members there about the word love, and I kept using the word love. And I said, you know, you don't have to say to your students, I love you. I do. everyone's starving for love, man. Everyone wants love. Everyone needs love. But for a lot of us, we didn't grow up like that. We didn't grow up with parents saying, I love you. You know, we knew they loved us. They may not have always said the words, I love you. And so the word love can be loaded. It can be difficult. It can be challenging. So we don't necessarily have to use that love, that word love. We could use the word I like you. But it's some expression of care is central, I feel, to my teaching and definitely to the practices of education and human values. And when I talk about love, I'm not necessarily talking about romantic love. Hopefully that's clear. I'm not even just talking about love between parent and child, which is very powerful. There's nothing like a mother's love. There is that love between teacher and student, for a teacher that really cares deeply about their students, that just is born naturally. The love that I always want to point to is a deeper human love, unconditional love. Unconditional means you don't have to do anything to earn my love. And that's a important and valuable thing when you're considering children, because when I'm getting children to do what I need them to do, I, in the past, before I started practicing human values, would withdraw my love from students. So a student's not doing what I asked them to do. They're not showing up to class. They're getting an F. And that's scary to me. They're doing nothing. That's scary to me because I felt that my well-being and my success as a teacher was dependent on them doing well. So if all my kids have an A, then I'm good. Then I get to keep my job. I'm a good teacher. But if a child is getting an F, oh no, I'm a bad teacher. So I get the fear going, and then I pass on that fear to the child, saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. So I told the story about a student who was just skipping class, and I was just like angry at them, aka withdrawing my love. And then eventually they came by when I was having lunch with another teacher in their room. I was like, hi, Ms. Payano. And I was like, what do you mean? Hello, why are you so chill? Why are you so cheerful? Don't you know you're failing my class? Yes. Well, do you care about passing my class? No. And I was like, oh. And something inside me, I believe, changed in that moment. This is a huge gift from the student, because in that moment, I was able to divorce that student's performance in my class from my ability to love them and care for them unconditionally. In that moment, because before that, I'm like, no, I have to be mad at them. I have to withdraw my love from them. Maybe not thinking that consciously. But I you know, I can't just be happy-go-lucky with them. Then I'm giving up as a teacher. Then I'm failing them. But in that moment, I realized, no, I can still love them, because even if a child is not doing well in my class, like, my job is to love them. My desire is to love them, because number one, I want the child to feel loved. That's like the most important thing. So in that moment, I decided, okay, I can love students even if they're not doing well in the class, and maybe they'll feel my love and maybe they'll show up more often. And that student did start showing up more often after that, because I'd see them in the hallways. Hey, Miss Brianna. Oh, hey, you know, ask them how they're doing, all that. So I felt more like myself being able to love them unconditionally, even if they weren't performing well. So when we see a student that is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, or our child is doing nothing, to us, we can start panicking, because we want them to succeed. We want them to get ahead. You should always be studying. You should always be doing something, some sport. And I see the kids that are anxious and overloaded with all of the activities they have to do. They're doing the sport where they're taking 5 AP classes in high school, and they need unstructured time. So I think that this value is very special, the value of slow movement. It's good for us as the adults, and it's good for the kids to just have some time to just breathe, to do their own things. Let's do a quick breathing exercise here as we're getting into our conversation. I want to do activity that, shout out to Ferris, Jen, and JJ, I love to do with their baby JJ. I think he was a year and a half when I first saw them do this, and I was blown away. Like, wow, even little kids can do breath work. So we're gonna together breathe, smell the flowers and blow out the candles. Smell the flowers and blow out the candles. One more time, smell the flowers and blow out the candles. And that's all you have to do. It's a beautiful exercise to do with even the young ones, to start getting used to, man, I can just be here and I can just breathe, and I don't have to do anything to be valuable. That's the value of slow movement. So yeah, I think I've seen this experience with parents and teachers a lot, where they look at kids doing nothing and they're like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? You should be practicing your instrument. You should be reading a book. You should be doing something. And of course, we want them to be disciplined. We want them to learn. We want them to do their work. But if that's all they're doing all the time, they have no time to rest or to play. You got to remember that when we're resting, the brain is doing stuff. You may look at your child and may say, like, oh, they're being lazy, they're being irresponsible, but the brain is processing the information. You know, I could think of, you know, I just went to Dominican Republic, so a lot of mango, a lot of mashed plantains with salami and eggs and fried cheese. Anyways, all the food. And then we would go somewhere else, and we had our family reunion at the pool, lots of food there, and then the after party, lots of food there, and then, oh, wait, and the Amaribel is also having people over. Let's go over there. And we're like, oh, we got to go because we might not see her. We got to leave to go back to Chicago soon, and more food. So by the end of that day, I was like so stuffed, right? I didn't give my body time to digest the food before I was already eating more food. And part of that was my fault, because I love eating and all the food's delicious, right? But maybe that's sometimes what we're trying to do with kids unconsciously, is like give them more knowledge and more knowledge and more knowledge and more activities and more activities and more sports. And their brain needs that time to digest the information and to process what's going on, right? So slow movement and resting and playing, those are not lazy things. That is developmentally so appropriate for the kids to be able to synthesize the information that they're receiving to process what's going on. If we just go from activity to activity to activity, then don't be surprised later on when there's some kind of blow up or rejection of activity, or don't want to do stuff or whatever it is, right? Sometimes it's beautiful to just sit there and just to be with them. I know as a teacher, we're taught, teach from the bell to the bell. I have five classes. There are each 5 minute passing periods between classes, and then 50 minute periods. And so the students need to be, according to our administration, need to be doing rigorous learning from the beginning bell to the ending bell. So for 50 minutes, they need to be on. Well, I have 5 classes, but students have 7 classes. So we're expecting students, and this is just in the high school realm, right? This is 13 to 18 years old. Back to back to back to back to back, rigorous learning for 7 50-minute periods a day straight. I think they did a study at Microsoft that they said the more back-to-back meetings you had, the more the brain deteriorated and it just like was not processing information. So if you're a teacher, you know, especially in high school, the last hour of the day, the kids don't want to do anything. They don't want to learn anything. Their brain is fried, you know, and this is in contrast to outdoor schools or alternative schools where the kids are out in nature learning, number one. And number two, they're choosing what they want to learn, right? They're not all grouped into one class. And so we're here, we're doing our best in the system that we're living in right now, but I stay dreaming of a different way that gives kids more time to take it slow. So a personal story that I'd love to share. This is a student of mine. He has graduated, so we'll call him Julian. And I am teaching, this is at the end of the year, last school year. And he was in my guitar class the previous year. He was in my ukulele class this last year. And I share a room with a colleague of mine who teaches guitar, and he's in that colleague's classroom while I'm in there on break. And without fail, every day that I'm in there, he'll come over and say, "Hey, Miss Piana, what's going on?" And he'll start talking to me. Awesome, awesome student. And he always has a lot to say. And I think towards the end of the year, I started getting a little bit frustrated because I've got work to do. I said break, but the break is like your prep period where you're planning lessons or you're answering emails from parents or staff members or admin. When you're grading, I'm often finding songs for the kids to play. So I'm there like planning, like, oh, is this song is going to work for this grade level? So I'm doing work. And so I start getting a little like, ooh, like I love talking to Julian. We have great conversations. But at the same time, I'm like kind of like wanting to avoid the conversation because I have work to do. And something clicked in me that last time that we talked that said like, okay, you know what? I know I have work to do. I know I'm very busy. But this kid is about to graduate. I've had him for 2 years in a row. I may never see him again. Let me slow down and have a conversation with him. Let me slow down, have him sit down next to me, and just listen to what he wants to say. Go ahead, Julian, tell me all the things you want to say, right? And we had a great conversation, of course, as always. And I was so glad that instead of giving in to the to-do list, to the hurry, worry, busy, to the I got work to do, I can't talk to you right now, kid. And instead, I chose love in that situation. And I said, you know what? I may never see this guy again. Let me have him sit down with me and listen, talk to me till his heart's content about how he just bought a new 12-string guitar and the songs that he's learning and what the job that he just got at Stan's Donuts and what he's going to do next year. And I believe looking back on it now that I chose right. You know, of course I had to stay late, make up that work later. But choosing humanity in that moment for me felt really, really good. So this is a challenge. I'm not saying any of this stuff is easy. You know, we all have lots of responsibilities. There's the never ending to do list that we got to fix the leak in the apartment, or, you know, we got the HOA meeting and things like that. And then we got work, we got the kids. Sometimes as a parent, you just want to get home. You only have energy to get the kid fed, bathed, make sure if they have homework, they did their homework, and then like put them to sleep. And then by that time you are just done, you know, you want to go to sleep yourself, you know, and especially as a single parent, man, it must be difficult. So I think one thing is just, we can raise our kids in community. Right now I am interested. I'm talking to a couple of friends of ours. They're about to have a baby. Shout out to Melody and Teal. And we're playing with this idea of moving in together into a building and buying a building together, a two flat, where they would stay on one floor, or we'll stay on another floor, so that we can raise our kids together. Because I think this nuclear family thing of like just the parents and the kids, I don't think that's the most useful thing, raising children like that, because they are just not going to get their needs met, especially in cooped up in a small apartment in an urban city like we have here in Chicago. They need to be around other kids and around other adults, and we need support. So, you know, whenever my friends, lots of my friends now are having babies, so I'm always like, hey, hit me up when you guys need some support. You need a date night, you need us to come over, we'll take care of the kids. And I feel that sometimes parents are a little bit hesitant at asking because it feels like asking too much. But it do take a village to raise a child. So for parents, my first thing is kind of like lean on your village, lean on your people. And, you know, to not worry about the kid being too young. Like, no, man, if grandma's not around, grandpa's not around, you know, your sister, whatever's not around, lean on your friends. You know, your friends are there. Especially if they have their kids of their own too. Like, yeah, we need that support. So I know there's maybe a stigma or a shame of asking for help. But the kids themselves, they need other people, other than their parents, watching them so they can build those social skills as well. And you all need a little bit of a break and a little bit of a time off. So that's kind of the first thing. And the next thing is, we get to describe, I tell my students a lot, as students, you get to describe what success looks like for you as a student. You don't have to be a straight A student. You know, are you learning in the area you want to learn? Great. That's the main thing. So for you to describe for yourself, what is success look like as a parent? So as a parent, you don't have to do it all. You know, especially for mothers, like this challenge and this expectations, like I could have it all, you know, and I think that there's always something that gets lost in the sauce. And I know a big contributor to the mental health of the children is the mental health of the mother. So, you know, Andrea and I are talking a lot about having our babies soon. Nothing to announce yet. Don't get too excited. But when that does happen, I'm going to do my best as a dad to show up and to take care of everything as much as I can. You know, I know postpartum is a big challenge for mothers in terms of mental health. So I just want to show up as a good dad and just take care of everything so that she can just focus on her mental health. That's my huge priority, because I want her mental health to be the priority, because I know that that's going to affect our kids in a positive way if she's doing well. So all this to say, you are the one who gets to say, what does success look like for us? You don't have to do everything perfectly. And I know it's very popular to, you know, we get into therapy and then we start blaming our parents for all of the trauma that they caused us. And, you know, it's like in this nuclear family setting, no one escapes childhood without some kind of trauma. Even I've had friends and students in the past who are like, oh, my parents were great. My childhood was great. It was perfect. I have nothing to complain about. And then a couple of years later, they're like, oh, yeah, these were the needs that I now realize I had that weren't being met. And it's not because your parents are bad people. It's because, number one, we don't go to school for parenting. You know, we got to go out of our way to seek the resources to help make parenting easier, but it's still always going to be a challenge. Rarely are we going to meet all of the needs of our child. We just described why. It's just, you know, back in the day, you could have one parent stay at home and live off of the other parent's salary. That is not the case in the United States anymore. Everyone has to work. And so it's really challenging to meet all of the needs of the child. And then also, what is the emotional intelligence and wisdom level of the parent? Because not every parent has the emotional intelligence to be like, oh, I'm being triggered right now. Let me do the heart high five and take a couple of breaths, and then I'll come back and talk to you, son. Not everyone has that training. You know, that's why the Human Value Collective exists. We want to provide that training for teachers and parents so that we don't pass on the same trauma to our kids. But it's a very challenging thing. Even the best parents, you know, there's going to be some things, there's going to be some needs of your child that are not going to be met. And that's okay. That's why we want to raise our children in village as much as possible and rely on the other adults in our lives. So get you some good community around you, because that's who's going to help raise a child as well. So three takeaways as we're winding down today. Very grateful that you joined me to learn about slow movement. Number one, name your rush. Where are you rushing? When you feel the urge to speed up, pause for 2 seconds and ask, what am I afraid will happen if I slow down? You don't have to fix it, just name it. Awareness is half the battle. Just being aware, oh, I'm rushing right now. I used to get mad at my sister, shout out to Chanti, because we'd had this joke of like, anytime we're meeting, she has 3 boys. Anytime we're meeting up for lunch or dinner or meeting somewhere, I'm like, oh, but Chanti's going to be 30 minutes late. And I used to kind of joke about that. And now that I know a little bit more what it's like being with children and raising children and all the backflips you got to do just to get the kids dressed and out of the house, I don't make that joke anymore, because I know it's challenging. And so I have a lot more compassion for parents. And I like the word sympathy. I was going to go there, but not sympathy, compassion, because it's a challenging thing. You know, it's just expect that there's going to be backups, expect there's going to be delays. These are children. And I would rather show up 30 minutes late to everything than have my children's card for life because I yelled at them for taking too long to put their shoes on. So that's the first thing. I also kind of reminds me of like being on the planes. We were on the plane. Baby was the baby that was crying. And I learned this from a trumpet player. We did a concert. Andrea played violin at a concert at our school, North Park University, with Hannibal Lacumbe. And then we went to eat breakfast with Hannibal and our orchestra director, Tom Zell. He's also on the board for Human Values Collective now, good friend of ours. And there was baby crying, and Hannibal, you know, he's a jazz trumpet player. And instead of being like, oh man, she should take that baby outside, why is that baby crying in here, disturbing my peace, Hannibal goes, ooh, look at those notes that baby's hitting. And I thought that was so cool and such an amazing perspective. And he was like, yeah, no other baby could hit those notes like that baby's hitting those notes. Saw the baby crying as an expression, as a musical expression. And now every time I hear a baby crying on a plane, that's what I say. It's like, ooh, that baby's like got some jazz, you know? Because what are we going to do here being angry at a baby? It's a baby, baby. It's a baby crying, upset, hungry, tired, uncomfortable, you know, and it helps no one to be shushing the baby or to be making comments at the parent, you know, and I know that hurts parents a lot. When we got off of the plane on our return trip from Dominican Republic, we were in line going through immigration, and we heard a mom talk to another mom next door. He's like, yeah, and like, you know, Yeah, it's like people on the plane, telling us this or that about the baby crying, and they just don't understand because they don't have kids. And so I was like, yeah, like that's her experience, who knows what someone who doesn't have kids mentioned to her, said to her to make her feel bad about her baby crying. And I was just there like, yeah, I don't have kids yet, but like, I get it. And that is a very individualistic way of looking at things, of like, it's about my comfort and you should stop that baby from crying. But guys, they're all our kids. They're all our babies. And seeing this from more of a Latino perspective, a collectivist perspective, which isn't just Latinos, but that all children are our children and that we need everyone's help to raise the children, and I saw that beautifully on display when I was in Dominican Republic just now, of like, my cousins, my little cousins now having their own babies and like, yeah, man, it's challenging. It's challenging when the kid just like doesn't want to, whatever, or hitting or yelling, or and you're trying to teach them how to do it right. It can't just come from the parents. We need the help of the whole village to educate the child. So I think I just want to say a big message of love to parents, especially on the airplane. Like, you're good, okay? Your baby's crying, you're good. I want to say most people on the plane have a lot of compassion for you. And I don't want you to feel, whether it's on the plane or in the restaurant or whatever, that your baby crying is bothering anyone. Like, no, let's get that mindset out of here. Thank you for having a child, bringing a child into this world and teaching them human values. That's a blessing to the world. It's not a disturbance or an imposition or an annoyance. The children are never a burden. They're always a blessing. So please carry that mindset forward with you today. So takeaway number two, you're going to pick a slow moment, not a whole day, not a new schedule, just one moment, a transition or a conversation or a meal where you choose to be fully there, fully present, put your phone away and look at the person in front of you and enjoy the moment for what it is, especially being in Dominican Republic, being on the beach, or being at home with my tía and her kids, my cousins, and just being present there with each other. Everything is slower there. Everything is just like taking it easy. And that was really good for me. Mr. Achievement, Mr. Capricorn, Mr. CEO over here is always wanting go, 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 to be able to slow down and smell the flowers, so to speak. And that's something my wife, Andrea, has always helped me with, to slow down and enjoy the moment. And then number three, takeaway number three, what I want to share with you is to let your kids see you slowing down. A big tenet of education and human values is to be able to be the example of that which we want our children to learn. Instead of just telling them what to do, we need to be the example of what to do. That's huge. So when a child watches you put your phone down and take a breath in response to something that's upsetting you, they learn that emotions aren't something that you have to run away from. So sometimes I've had this experience in school where, did I tell the story already of the kid? We have like a little loft space and we have different bands playing. And so a kid will like, he like spilled water on the like the loft area, the elevated area, and then a student is like, Mr. Payano, points at the wall and there's like liquid falling down on all the posters, and I'm like, oh, my Kurt Cobain poster. And then I kind of like got triggered in that moment, and then I was just like, I need a moment to breathe. And the kid was like, okay, and there's paper towels, I have a whole cleaning station, you know how it goes. So the paper towels, and they're cleaning it up, and I'm just there like breathing. I'm like, it's just the poster. It was just what ended up being just water. So in the end, it was fine. No harm, no foul. There's a little bit of stain, and it's all good. And this thing came up to me. He's like, Mr. Payano, I'm so sorry. It was an accident. And I was just like, it's all good, man. You're good. No worries. And I think I was able to not only not snap at this kid in anger, but I think the first student, the one who pointed out what was happening, was like, wow, you really did a great job pausing and breathing in that moment. I'm like, yeah, I hope you learned something from that. They were like, definitely. So to be that example, to let our kids seeing us slow down, is huge. That's going to be something that stays with them for the rest of their life. And every time they get upset, they're going to know what to do. They're going to have a strategy for feeling better and taking care of their emotions. And, you know, what did Brene Brown say in the Trevor Noah podcast, of knowing how to dump your emotional garbage in the trash rather than dumping your emotional garbage all over who you're next to at that moment. So that's what this work is about. And I hope you're inspired to continue practicing human values. So we had our webinar, Raising Resilient Kids in an Out-of-Control World. That was very successful, and we did a very special, making it more accessible for parents. So that's something that you can check out on our website. But now what I'm excited to invite people into is the Bring Back Sunday Dinner Challenge. That's our next activity for parents who have been getting the value of the week. The value of the week is a conversation card that goes out for free to our community every Friday morning. And it shares the value of the week, the thought of the week, a little blurb to read out with your family. And then it has questions, which are divided up between 4 through 11 years old, and then 12 through 17 years old. And then there's questions for the whole family. And so whatever age your kids are, you have a way to ask them questions and start conversations about the value of the week. And to make the space for open communication. So yeah, we want the kids to learn about the value of the week and then point to the behavior we want them to inhabit. But also what we're doing secretly, Trojan Horse, is we're opening communication. We're opening a space for emotional communication so that when your child feels bad in the future, they're going through something emotionally, that communication channel is already open. And we've seen some incredible closeness and unity that has come from the families in our community practicing the value of the week together. So I get if, you know, you've been getting the email and you're reading it and you're like, yeah, this is cool, but I'm still not exactly sure how to bring this up with my family yet, or I could use a refresher, then that's what the Bring Back Sunday Dinner Challenge is for. It's a four-week experience where we're going to share a little bit more than what's on the conversation card. So we're going to give a more of a script of exactly what to say word for word. There's going to be training videos. There's going to be live calls. And there's going to be a group chat where you can join a community of other parents who are also doing the Sunday night dinner practice. And then the goal of the challenge is, can you sit down with your family for four Sundays in a row at dinner or a family meeting and do the value of the week? So it's a challenging you and your family, and you can do it as a family together. And then you can get on a call, you can ask me questions. So it's really an amazing opportunity to kind of like jumpstart this practice into your family, especially if you need a little bit more guidance on how to do it. Sometimes for me, this feels easy. It's like, come on, guys, just talk about the value of the week. That's a big deal, right? But then I want to honor that my experience. I've been in front of kids for the last 16 years talking about just in general music and music making and social change. And then in the last 8 years, teaching human value. So I recognize that not everyone has that experience. So if you want a little bit more support, Bring Back Sunday Dinner Challenge is the place to go. And in order to find that, you can go to humanvaluescollective.org. Scroll down, you can see all the things we offer there, and then just click on the programs tab. Go to Unstoppable Parents, and you'll see all the information there about how to sign up And the most beautiful thing is meeting other parents that are doing this work too, and that have had amazing results in their families. Because when we're doing this kind of adult education, online education, one of the most beautiful things is to learn from your peers and to learn from other people who are in the same situation as you doing the amazing work. So I'll leave you with this. The world is going to keep moving fast. The notifications aren't going away. The calendar is going to continue filling up. But there's one thing that is always in your power, and that is to slow down before you speak, slow down before you decide, and slow down before you walk past your kids, before really seeing them and really being present for them and really offering them a space to be close to you. Because at the end of the day, your child wants to have a really, really, really good relationship with you. So let's slow down and make time for that. Even if it's just once a week, it makes a difference. You've made today an amazing day just by you being you. There's no one like you in the whole world, and I like you just the way you are. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Human Values Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please share it with another teacher or parent who wants to bring more love, truth, peace, nonviolence, and right action into their work with their kids. And until next time, I love you, baby.